Hi there, time now for Ghost Biz. You're on the Business Report. I'm Gary Strubel. Every week I get to talk to the finance ghost to find out what's going on amongst some of the bigger companies here in Southern Africa. Ghost, welcome back to the show. Let's start out with an unlikely story. And Telkom, South Africa's state-owned telecoms company, has had a colorful last 25 years. But it seems like it's ahead of the pack at the moment, certainly from a share price perspective. Closed 8% higher after releasing trading update for the third quarter, and is ahead of both MTN and Vodacom in terms of the past 12 months. That's unusual. Tell us more.
Hello, Gary, and to all the listeners. Yes, what a story, right? It's not often that we get to say, hey, here's a cool thing about Telkom. But actually, if you go and look over the last 12 months, Telkom's share price slightly ahead of Vodacom and quite a bit ahead of MTN, actually, even though MTN had the mother of all rallies since the start of this year. Of course, if you look over 5 years, I'm afraid it's nowhere near as exciting, although Telkom's actually still done quite well there. They've outperformed Vodacom, but quite a long way down on MTN. The returns in the last year look amazing. All three of them well north of 20%. So it's been a year of, I guess, recovery in the telecom story. 5 year returns, not so good. And it's not a sector that I personally am invested in. I always use my own cell phone contract as a great example. You know, even without adjusting for inflation, I pay less now, as in much less than I did 10 years ago. But goodness knows the costs of servicing me as a client have definitely not gone down. So not an easy space to play. They have to find new sources of growth. They can't just rely on the sort of old traditional mobile growth. Having said that, that is a big part of what is driving Telkom at the moment. But obviously, they are coming off a small base. You know, they are the challenger brand in South Africa. And they've got this mix of growth and legacy businesses there at Telkom, some of which really are just continuing to go down and down. But obviously, what's happened over time is as the new stuff has grown, it's become a bigger part of the story. So then the legacy side, which is shrinking, is a smaller and smaller part of the group and actually starts to matter a lot less over time. So when you see stuff like service revenue growth in mobile of 9.6% at Telkom, that's really decent actually. But the big jump and what really got the market excited was group EBITDA up 28%. That is really, really good growth. It means the EBITDA margin improved by 580 basis points. So EBITDA margin up from 21.4% to 27.2%. That is a big, big jump. And it just shows the efficiency starting to come through at Telkom and the way they've actually changed the group over time and some of the changes they've made to their capital structure, the way they've disposed of properties in the past year or so. They also expect the SwiftNet disposal to be concluded by the end of this financial year. And as they're heading to the final quarter of this year, they have a generally positive outlook. I'm not really surprised based on how good this third quarter has been. So yeah, Telkom, a nice surprise, but I've got to say, still not a sector that I have any interest in having long-term investments in. It's just really difficult.
Let's take a look now at the insurance industry, where Santam are one of the giants here in Southern Africa. And great results from a company that's that big to be able to grow 35% growth in headline earnings per share. For the first 6 months, it was a great start, but the second half got even better. How is an insurance company able to produce those sorts of results in the current climate?
So insurance is really driven by, well, there's a few things, right? So obviously, there's the number of policies you sell. I mean, that's clear. That's the number of clients you have insurance with you. And more clients should, in theory, equal more profit. But not if you mispriced your policy. So that brings me to the second point, which is the underwriting margin. And that has been the reason why Santam has done so well in the latest results. So their interim performance, they managed nearly 35% growth in HEPS. And by the time we get to year end, they reckon their full year growth is more like 40 to 60%. So they have had a massive second half to the year. And as I say, it's really come down to net underwriting profit. So that means that number one, they're pricing their policies correctly. And number two, even though there have been some major loss events, it's been within their expectations because they've come in with an underwriting margin within their target range. Now, of course, there's a practical limit to the underwriting margin. It can't just go infinite because it means your insurance is too expensive relative to the risks out there and then you start to lose clients. So like with most businesses, you have to try and balance off your pricing against the volumes that you want to try and sell. And Suntan does seem to be getting that right. And then the third way in which insurance companies make money is because they generally sit on very large reserves and very large balance sheets. And they obviously need to sit on that stuff so they can pay out claims. They can then go and invest that in the markets. So if there are good returns on offer in the markets across a variety of debt and equity, then this will help insurance companies. They'll go and invest their float. And obviously, if returns are not so good, then that doesn't do insurance companies any favors whatsoever. So we'll have to wait and see how Suntan really did in terms of top line growth. They've talked about gross written premium growth. So that's their revenue basically as being satisfactory, quote unquote. So we'll have to see what satisfactory means when they release their results on the 3rd of March. But with HEPS growth like that, I'm pretty sure that investors think it's more than satisfactory. It really is a great number.
Let's turn our attention to mining now and platinum more specifically. Now, South Africa has around 88% of the world's total of platinum metal group metals reserves. If we take a leaf from what De Beers did with diamonds back in the early 1900s, late 1800s, how is South Africa not better able to protect the platinum market from massive commodity pricing volatility, which seems to have hit Implats? And Implats looking at nearly a 50% drop in headline earnings. Tell us a little bit more about that.
That's a really interesting question. And look, I'm not sure that I'm actually that well placed to answer it. I suppose what would come to mind is that De Beers was able to effectively create an artificial market for diamonds at therefore an artificial price, right? Because, you know, as recent trends have shown us when it comes to lab-grown diamonds, the bulk of the use for diamonds is in jewelry, and that price is what people are willing to pay for it. Whereas when it comes to platinum, yes, there is some jewelry use for it, but the biggest user, at least as far as I understand it, is very much the automotive industry. It's catalytic converters. It's that whole side of things. And I think when you have an industrial client base, they are not so interested in cute marketing slogans and a little bit of guilt for major milestones in their lives. They are instead interested in, you know, what is this technology? Do we need it? What does it cost in the car? And is there an alternative? And unfortunately, with everything that's happened in the automotive sector and this whole push towards EVs, et cetera, platinum prices have taken a drop. Now, what's quite interesting is if you go and chart them, there's actually some signs of life in there, but the averages are still not good. And it's also an issue in terms of the underlying platinum basket, because it's not just platinum. There are other metals in there like palladium and rhodium. And so what happens is the local mining companies don't always have the same mix of that stuff coming out the ground. And so if one of them has had real price pressure, you know, you won't see that by just looking at a platinum price. So it is a very complex space. The other reason it's complex is because there's this old story in mining where when PE multiples are high, you actually should be paying more attention. Now, normally when you're investing in non-mining sectors, a high PE multiple means, ooh, danger. In mining, it actually means, opportunity, because it means that earnings are very depressed. And that's often when the cycle is starting to turn. And then that PE multiple, you know, comes all the way down, 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 down. And it gets to the point where it's very low. And that's actually the most dangerous time. So people who get badly hurt in the mining sector, they haven't had experience investing in it. They go and they screen for low PE multiples and they say, oh, look how affordable this is. Look how cheap this is. It's not an amazing trailing earnings yield, an amazing trailing dividend yield. You know, I'm going to make a fortune here. And then they just watch that literally disappear in the next 12 months because actually this thing was at the very top of the cycle. Prices have come off or are starting to come off and that dividend is not going to be repeated next year. The platinum sector is just one example of this. It's probably the hardest one. So case in point, Impala Platinum's earnings down really severely. I mean, as you say, almost half. It's an expected drop in HEPS of between 40 and 49%. But the share price has actually done really nicely in the past year. So, you know, it just shows how earnings can go in one direction and the share price can go in the other because it's all about future expectations, where things are trending, etc. And there is some renewed energy around the platinum sector and just maybe EVs won't be adopted as quickly. I am a petrol head myself, so I see a lot of the news headlines on my feed from pages I follow about more and more car manufacturers realizing that they need to keep investing in internal combustion engines. They can't just run away from this technology. And that is bullish for platinum. So, you know, will that help? time will tell, but unfortunately, yeah, no De Beers heroics here. Although, as we've now recently seen, even De Beers can't control things forever. No one can.
That's it for this week's Ghost Biz. Stay tuned for next week. We'll be back. And of course, you can pick this piece up if you missed a story or would like to share it or learn more. You can get along to wherever you pick up your podcasts, and you can hear Ghost Biz as a standalone feature or as part of the whole program.